You know, it's interesting. Marlis and I were just talking about this. The sermonette this morning up in Laurel was given by Sam Dungan, and it fit perfectly with my presentation today. And Buford gave one, and it fits perfectly with my presentation today. And the two topics are not even close to each other. So either God was in this, or I'm just giving way too general sermons, and any sermonette can fit with it. I don't know which. But what I want to do today is I want to talk about, and this is going to take me a second to get this going, so slideshow from the beginning. There we go. The qualities of leadership, and you're going to see a lot of what Mr. Luke had to say will dovetail with this. As he said, I'd like for you to actually picture someone in your mind, someone that you look up to as a great leader. Now, picture that person in your mind. Now let's go through some scenarios. For some of you, it would be a favorite president. George Washington, maybe. Abraham Lincoln, maybe. Ronald Reagan. A lot of people like Dwight Eisenhower. Sometimes it would be a teacher from our formative years. I mean, everybody likes all their high school teachers, right? I mean, all those teachers are just amazing. I have a couple of high school teachers that I would consider great leaders. I do. Some would choose their own parents or grandparents. I look at my grandmother as a great leader. She was the first one to come into the church and brought the rest of us along, and that was a great thing. Now, some would look toward sports figures and all of that. Unfortunately, a lot of the sports figures, because of how much money they make at a very young age, they don't do so well in the character side of things. But if you have someone in mind, ask yourself, why them? What quality, what characteristics do they have that makes them a great leader in your mind? I went through a form of leadership when I got my MBA. They were training me to be a leader in business. And here are the classes that I took: financial accounting, managerial accounting, industrial marketing, public policy impact, organizational analysis. I even know how to do Poisson tables. How many of you even know what a Poisson table is? There you go. MBA stuff taught me how to be a leader. I had only one class on ethics. And I was lucky to have one class on ethics, because a lot of MBA programs don't have it. I went to University of Dallas, which is a Catholic school, and they required that you take ethics. That was the most entertaining class of all of them. I mean, face it, financial accounting and managerial accounting, that's pretty boring stuff. But ethics was really interesting, because they went through a lot of things, the ethics in business. Example, they talked about how there are people that will drive around looking for trucks that have logos on them, like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever, and run into them so that they can sue the deep pockets of the company. They do that for a living. It's amazing. I actually saw a video of a guy who did that. They had a dash cam, fortunately. And they were stopped at a stoplight, and this guy on a scooter pulled out in front of a car, and then he backed his scooter up and hit it into the front of the car, and then took his head and put his head back into the, probably got whiplash from it, I don't know, but that he did that so he could sue the company. Things like that, talking about what it means to be an ethical leader, not just a leader that understands the accounting of it. Really interesting. But I only, again, had one class on ethics. There are thousands and thousands of books out there, websites, courses that you can take. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, that was a course that I took 20-some-odd years ago. And I'm glad I did. Yet do those books make us great leaders? I'd like to talk today about how you can become a great leader. Is it learned or is it hardwired? You know, there are some people that think that you can't be a great leader unless you were born to be a great leader. That there's some genetic code in there that makes us a great leader. If you look at the person who you saw as a great leader, what are his or her qualities? What makes them a great leader? Were they good at accounting? Maybe they were great with spreadsheet, Excel. Boy, they were just Excel geniuses, and that was what made them a great leader. But usually not. Usually when you think back on someone who is a great leader, you think of the character. You think of the quality of the person, and you don't necessarily think of some of the other attributes that we'll see here in just a moment. We're going to start the Kogwa Christian Leadership Training Program. I've got a slide up here of Mr. Horchak holding up the booklet that I'll be teaching from. The reason why we want to start this program should be obvious. We want to be able to develop local leadership, and I want to talk about what that means. So we'll get into this program in just a little bit, but I first wanted to explore just the general topic of leadership. How hard is it to be a good leader? You ever tried to be a good leader? How about if you know some friends of yours are going down the wrong path? Do you have the character to step in the gap and say, no, this is wrong? And we talked about this last year at camp, one of the Christian Living seminars that I gave. I talked about that, especially to the girls. I said, if you're ever hanging around a bunch of guys and their conversation starts to slip into the toilet, you know what I'm talking about, and you get uncomfortable with it, all you should have to say is, you're making me uncomfortable, and that should stop on a dime. If it doesn't, those aren't the kind of kids you need to run around with. Have the character to stand in the gap and say, this is wrong. Guys, do the same thing. If there's just guys around and the conversation starts to fall, be the one to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. We shouldn't be talking about this. That's leadership. But you know what? That's real hard to do. It's hard to do. People don't like to have to be a leader. It's easier just to sit in the back and not do anything. And yet that doesn't help the church. I want to look at a leader who actually didn't want to be a leader. Go to Numbers chapter 11. I get a big kick out of this. This is something that happened to Moses. Numbers chapter 11. He gets a little whiny here, so we got to kind of put up with that, but it is kind of fun to read. This is, they're on the road. They've got the manna. They've had water. They've had miracle after miracle after miracle, and yet they're complaining because they don't have any meat. And Moses has, it's just, he's fed up. He's tired of being a leader. So let's read through this in Numbers chapter 11, and let's start in verse 10. It says, then Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, every one at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Eternal was greatly roused. Moses also was displeased. So Moses said to the Eternal, why have you afflicted your servant? Why have you done this to me? Why me? I don't want to be in charge. Why have you afflicted your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight that you've laid this burden of this people on me? You know, sometimes leadership can be a real burden. It can be a real pain to be the one to stand up and say, no, you've got to go this way. This is the direction we need to go. Verse 12, he lays it on pretty thick here. Did I conceive all of these? Are these my kids? You know, sometimes in a leadership role, the people that follow you sometimes can seem like big babies. I'm sure that's what Moses was going through. And yet, when you think about it, I can remember, we mentioned Mr. Armstrong earlier. I remember Mr. Armstrong talking about how you're all my children in the faith. He was leading his family. Did I conceive all these people, Moses said? Did I beget them that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat and to give to all these people? He stopped looking at the power of God and he's just started. Now he's complaining. He's actually doing the exact same thing that the rest of them were. And I don't think he saw that. For the people, they all weep saying, give us meat. I am not able to bear all of these people alone because this burden is too heavy for me. This burden of leadership. If you treat me like this, please just kill me here and now. Oh boy, now he's really landed on thick. If I have found favor in your sight, and don't let me see any more of this wretchedness. He had just got to the place where he was tired of being a leader. He didn't want it anymore. You know, sometimes it is pretty tough to stand in the gap and to be a leader. We're going to read some scriptures about that in just a little while. But as I was thinking about who some great leaders are in my past, I thought a lot about Mr. Armstrong. I was fortunate to be at Ambassador College when he was there for quite a bit of the time. I got to have dinner in his house. I got to fly with him on his jet. We spent time listening to him. He spoke maybe one or two Sabbaths a month. So we got to hear him a lot. And I'm proud of that. Some people look back at those days with jaundiced eyes, but I don't. I have just a lot of very good memories about that. But as I was looking at other leaders, I also came across one guy that I've always thought was a pretty good military leader, since we're coming up on Memorial Day. I also thought that this guy at one point in time was going to run for president, and I would have liked to have seen him as a president, and that's General Colin Powell. He travels around right now doing leadership seminars. He's written several books on leadership, and I actually wanted to show you a slide here that lists the 13 points of leadership. This was one of his first books. And then after we're done with these, I want to play a little clip where he talks about writing this book. But here's his 13 rules of leadership. I hope you can see them. If not, I'll read them out to you. I want to go through each one of these just real quickly, and then three of them I'm going to cover in just a little bit more detail. Leadership rule number one, it ain't as bad as you think. It'll look better in the morning. What's he mean by that? Sometimes, as a leader, you just think everything's falling apart and it's not working. But if you keep at it, it will get... Go to bed with a positive attitude, and the next day get up and keep trying. Don't give up, in other words, what he's saying. Get mad, but get over it. Right? Ever had any parent in this room ever got irritated at their kids? It happens. Any husband ever got irritated with his wife? Well, usually it's the other way around, but... This happens, right? But you get mad and you get over it. And that's what a good leader does. You can get upset, but you've got to get over it and you've got to keep leading. Avoid having your ego so close to your position that when your position falls, your ego goes with it. I'm actually going to talk more about that one in just a moment. It can be done. Having the positive attitude when everybody else around you is thinking, now this is going to fall flat on its face. A leader's got to stand up and say, no, this is the direction we're going to go here. Be careful what you choose, you may get it. A leader is the one that says, hey guys, we're going off in this direction. Well, if this direction leads you into a swamp, that's a bad thing. So you got to think about, as a leader, you got to think about where you're taking people, because they're going to fall. They're going to follow you. Don't let adverse facts stand in the way of a good decision. You know, I think about what Craig is going through. He probably will get some job offers, and as long as you work on the Sabbath, right? That's an adverse reaction, maybe, but if you do the right thing and you make a good decision, it will pose a good decision for you later on down the road. Don't let adverse things stand in the way of making the right decision. Always make the right decision. Next one, you can't make someone else's choices, and you shouldn't let someone else make yours. That is very true even when talking about religion. How many times when you get into conversations, if you ever had a conversation with somebody that's in your family that's not a member of this church, and they think their religion's right and your religion's wrong, they try and change you and you try and change them, it didn't work. Don't try and change somebody else, but don't let somebody else change you either. If this is the direction you're going, go. Prove it's right and go. Good leadership. Check small things. I'm actually going to come back to that one when he does that on his tours, his lecture tours. He actually quotes scripture on this one, so I'm going to come back to that. Share the credit. As a leader, if you've got people working for you, after your people have done great things and maybe made your company a lot of money or whatever, what you don't want to do is then... go to your boss and say, look at all this great stuff that I did. No, you go and say, here are the 10 people that worked on this project, and I want to share the glory with them. Remain calm and be kind. Sometimes that's pretty tough to do. You ever heard the story of feeling like you're a duck on water? You look calm from the water up, but from the water down, you're paddling for all that you've got worth trying to get to the other side. You have to remain calm. He talked about that. He said there are, and you're going to hear this in his comments later on, there are times when everybody else is unsure, and you've got to be sure. You've got to be the one to stay calm. Have a vision and be demanding. If you've got a direction that you need to go, then if you stay the course, you're going to get there. Don't take counsel of your fears or naysayers. I'm going to actually talk about that one just a little bit more. And then this is the one that is, to him, the most important one. Perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. And he'll talk about that in just a little while when I show you the video clip. If you are optimistic as a leader, then you will generate optimism among those whom you're trying to lead. But if you're a pessimistic leader, you're going to be a downer to the whole crew. So you've got to be optimistic about what it is that you're doing. Now, I want to take just a few of these as you go through these, and you could probably come up with more. In fact, he'll talk about, he had a lot more. These are just the first 13 that he put down. But I want to go through a couple of these and show you a scripture. Some of these actually have confirmation, if you want to say, in scripture. Some of these are pretty good points. So let's look at one of them here. Avoid having your ego so close to your position that when your position falls, your ego goes with it. That reminds me of Proverbs 2:15, and I've got the first few of these on the slide. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. If you start a project with arrogance and with an ego, and the project fails, everyone is going to see your ego, and they're going to see your arrogance. They're not going to see the fact that something happened to the project. If you don't have your arrogance in this, and you're thinking about what it is that you're doing, if you do fail, then you start over and you try and fix the project. I was listening to a guy the other day talking about Abraham Lincoln, and I know you've all heard this story, but he failed at business, he failed at a Senate run, he failed in several different things, but he didn't let his ego get in the way where he was so deflated he thought, well, I'm just going to quit. He kept going and he kept trying and became a pretty great leader. But it's easier to get back up if the fall doesn't come with arrogance. Avoid the ego. Very interesting. Here's another one. I like this one too. This is the one that he actually quotes. He says, check the small things. As a leader, look at the Song of Solomon, chapter 2 and verse 15. It says, catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Now, what does he mean by that? As a leader, you've got to know if there are rodents in your vineyard patch and you need to get rid of them. In other words, if you've got this great plan, you've got this great vineyard, and sometimes leaders just sit back and they go, boy, look at this great vineyard, and they don't realize they've got foxes in the vineyard. So check the small things. As a leader, you have to sometimes get down into the weeds and into the details. Sometimes leaders get so trapped into being just a big picture person that the project fails because they haven't been paying attention to those that were working for them. You've probably all heard this before, but a leader can delegate authority but not responsibility. I can say, well, I want you to do this and you to do this and you to do this, but I still am responsible for the project. I can't delegate responsibility. So he says sometimes you have to get into the weeds to make sure things are going to be successful. And let's look at one last one. Don't take counsel of your fears or naysayers. In other words, if something has happened, if a project has fallen, and all of a sudden you're paralyzed in fear, then you're never going to get up and you're never going to move forward again. That reminds me of 2 Timothy 1:7. I'm going to quote Paul talking to Timothy three different occasions during this sermon. Because Timothy was a young minister, and Paul was this old guy who was trying to help him learn to be a leader. So he says to Timothy, God hasn't given you a spirit of fear. He's given you a spirit of power and love and of a sound mind. All right, you go down this path, you're working on a project, and something happens that's wrong. If you just get fearful, then you get paralyzed and you can't move forward. That's no bueno. It doesn't help anymore. You've got to get to the place where you allow yourself to look. Okay, something happened, a door closed. Let's look and see if another door opens. And if all the doors close, instead of just cowering in fear, say, okay, well, I wasn't supposed to open any of these doors. Find another project that you can work on and keep going. Don't take counsel in your fears or the naysayers. There's always going to be someone that's going to tell you you're wrong. Always. I don't care what you do. Someone is going to tell you you're wrong. Now, what I want to do is, as we have seen all of these 13, I want to play a video. This is a video of Colin Powell talking about these 13 points. Now, someone asked him how he came up with them and to give a little bit of wisdom about those 13 points. So hopefully the sound will come through on this. We haven't tried it yet. We'll see what happens.
In 1989, Parade magazine had published your 13 rules of leadership. Mm-hmm. For CUNY students and alumni, what guidelines would you give them today?
Well, they're still pretty good. I mean, mm-hmm. we have been sending them out to people for the last 23, 24 years now. And there's nothing magic about them. They're pretty commonsensical. And the reporter who wrote that article asked me to look at some little sayings I had under my desk glass that he had heard about and just read off some of them. I read off the first 13 that were publishable, were not rude. And those are the ones he printed. And people have asked, well, which of these 13 rules are the most important? I said, the first and the last, number one and number 13. Number one says, you know, it isn't as bad as you think. It'll be better in the morning. It may not be better in the morning. It's not a prediction. It's an attitude to go to bed with that says, ah, no matter what happened today, we're going to be better tomorrow. We're going to fix it tomorrow. And the 13th rule is a derivative from a military saying, and that is that force multipliers are things you do to make your force more effective and to make yourself more effective and to make your organization more effective, perpetual optimism. Always think things are going to get better, no matter how bad things may seem at the moment. And I think that's an attitude for young people. A lot of young students that I meet or I talk to, they face difficulties in school, they face other difficulties in life, and it starts to get them down. And so, no, man, never be down, always be up. In the Army, they teach you, you know, no matter how cold everybody may be, you're the leader, you're never cold. Troops may be hungry, you're never hungry, you're the leader. Yeah. They may be tired, you're never tired.
Yeah. And you're so that even keel.
You've got to be optimistic that mm-hmm. things will get better. And I think our youngsters don't get enough of that.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's interesting, when I was listening to that, I was thinking of all of the colleges now that have safe rooms for kids to go, you know, cry and get away from all of the bad things of the world. It's like we're raising a generation of sissies instead of a generation of leaders. College can teach you academics, but they're not going to teach you quality. They're not going to teach you ethics. They're not going to teach you character. One of the neat things about Ambassador College, it was Mr. Armstrong founded it on, that this was not only going to teach you how to make a living, but teach you how to live. And the idea behind that was to develop godly character. So I want to talk about that today. As I look at the points that General Powell had, I have no problem with any of them. I don't look at any of them and say, no, that's wrong. But when I look at that list, it doesn't go far enough. And he would probably say the same thing. Again, this was just the first 13. He had a piece of glass on his desk, and he had stuck little slips of paper under him as he had heard sayings that he thought were good. He would slip them under that glass so that he could refer to them every once in a while. But I think what he's missing here, when you look at his points, he's not talking about the quality of character that goes into good leadership. If a leader can't be trusted, he can't lead because no one will follow him. If you don't trust your leader, you won't follow him. And I think that that's a problem that many leaders that I have had in the past, when I was working in business, I had some directors and vice presidents. They were very knowledgeable, again, about accounting and spreadsheets and all of that, but they just weren't nice people. And after a while, they would alienate themselves from others, and people just got to the place where they didn't listen to him and they didn't follow him anymore because he didn't have character. You can have great ideas, you can help solve big problems, but if you don't have good character, people are going to question everything that you do. And then instead of leading, you're always going to be troubleshooting. You need to get out of that. How can we add to General Powell's list to complete the picture of great leadership? Now, I want to go on a little tangent for a moment, and hopefully this will help explain why we're doing this leadership program. Where is the church heading right now? I want you to think about it. Our leadership today must be replaced with new leaders tomorrow. And we have to do that today. People that we hire into the ministry now can't really effectively run a church until they've worked under someone for a couple of years. So we can't wait for someone to quit or to drop over dead and then say, oh, well, we'll grab you and out you go. No, that doesn't work that way. There's a much longer process to this. Our leadership today has to be working to replace themselves. There isn't a second option. I want to show you a picture of someone. You probably, most of you know who this is. This is Dave and Pam Myers. Before we started this leadership project, he was giving a speech at the last ministerial conference that we went to that was 2 years ago. And he said during that time, he said, you know what's really sad? He says, I have been a pastor for 35 years, and I'm still called the young guy. That lets you know how old some of the other people are. I mean, he's completely gray-headed and going bald, and yet he's the young guy. He actually is a year younger than me, so he is the young guy still. How do we replace leaders? By what process do we develop leadership in the church? So one of the concerns that I have about the fact that I want to start this leadership training is there are some who may think, oh, this leadership project is just to train ministers. And it's not. It's not what we're doing. If we only wanted to train ministers, we would go to part two of this. Part one is the leadership program. Part two is a pastoral training program. This is step one. This is for anybody. This is for a five-year-old if a five-year-old wants to learn how to be a leader on a playground. And I'm going to talk about what five-year-olds can do in just a little while. This is for teenagers. This is for young adults. This is for our senior citizens. There's a reason why we want to go through this. I want to ask you some fundamental questions. Are you ever too old to be a leader? Are you ever too young to be a leader? Are you too introverted to be a leader? Now sometimes that gets people. You know, the old spokesman's club where people didn't want to join that because they were afraid of public speaking. My first sermonette was a disaster. I was terrible at it. I even had a guy come up and tell me that at church. Hey, you did. It was years later. I had been giving sermonettes and all that, and he came up and he said, boy, you have gotten so much better. When you first started? That's fair. That's probably something that I needed to hear. The answer to all those is no. You're never too old, you're never too young, or you're never too introverted to be a leader. Why do I say that? As an older person, as a younger person, and as an introvert, I want to actually talk about those three things just for a moment. To our seniors in the group, when you develop leadership qualities, it means a couple of things. One, you are bettering yourself as a son or daughter of God. Why are you in the church today? To be leaders tomorrow. You're going to, as people come up in the resurrection, you're going to be teaching them. As we have opportunities to help fix a dying planet, you're in a leadership role right now. You're in an MBA program. And they're not just teaching you financial accounting. They're teaching you ethics. They're teaching you character. That's why you're here. Don't ever stop. Don't ever think, okay, well, I'm too old now to learn anything new, so I'll just stop learning. It doesn't help. Also, when people younger than you see the fire that is lit in you, it helps light a fire in them. People see you as a mentor. I mentioned this morning in Laurel, too. When to you out there that are 15, 16, and 17 years old, a 12-year-old coming into camp, and you're 15, 16, 17, a 12-year-old sees you as an old person. You don't see yourself that way. But they do. There's that age gap is huge. You know, 12-year-olds are this tall and 15-year-olds are this tall and guys' voices have started to change and theirs hasn't. And they just look at you as they look up to you as natural. To our seniors, when you have a fire lit under you for God's word, you prepare the younger members to be growing and learning themselves. That goes with General Powell's last point. Perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. If you, as seniors in the audience, are on fire about God's truth, those younger people around you are going to feel that fire. If they come into a church full of dead wood, then they're not going to want to come to church. But if they come to church with energy and enthusiasm and excitement, then that is a force multiplier. I'd like to look at a couple of scriptures. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. I mentioned earlier that I was going to talk about Timothy quite a bit in here. 2 Timothy chapter 2. This is Paul talking to a young minister in the church. This is an older person. This is a senior who is talking to a younger person. Seniors, I'm talking to you here. Verse 1 says, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Jesus Christ. And the things that you have heard from me," in other words, as the senior teaching you, "and the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit those to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So, you grandparents out there, you teach, and then they will teach their kids, and they will teach their kids, and you keep passing along the knowledge of God. One of the things that Jim Franks has been talking about to us in the ministry, and you probably have heard it come across in a lot of his letters and things, is the need to have doctrinal purity. Because if you're not continually talking about that, it will slip. We saw it in 95. You can't let that happen. So as a senior leader in the church, he is constantly, constantly talking about that. Paul's going to talk about that to Timothy in just a little while. Commit these to faithful men. You don't have to be on the podium to teach a younger person. In fact, very few of you get up here and behind the podium, but all of you have the leadership potential to set an example for somebody else in the church, for them to catch the fire. You teach others, they will learn from you, the young people will look up to you, and you remember when I talked about the last time where Mrs. Wynette sat in this teen club and talked about what it was like growing up without electricity. That was fascinating to the kids. They ate that up. You have stories. You have things that you can tell, and it will help teach our youth. There's an old saying that supposedly was attributed to Francis Assisi, and I don't think that it actually was, but he said, always be prepared to give a sermon and use words if you have to. In other words, just by what you do, by the character that you display, do you have one set of language here and another out there? That's no good. That doesn't help. Set the example, teach by example. The next generation will learn from that. Go to Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. And let's start in verse 3. Leadership is not just for men. That's why I say this. I want ladies to come to this leadership training. I want teenagers to come to this. Anybody who wants to come to this may. Here's what the senior ladies in the congregation should do. The older women and older women likewise, that they be reverent in their behavior. In other words, set the example. You need to be the type of person that others can look at and say, when I have kids or whatever, I want to be like this person. Or when I have grandkids, I want to be like this person. Be reverent in your behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine. Teachers of good things. You should be able to teach others. Not from the podium. That's not what I'm talking about. Ladies, you should be teachers. You should be teaching those that are around you. Verse 4, that they admonish the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. I had a personal correspondence letter come in this week that really made me sad. It was a teenage boy, and he wrote in saying, is it Christian for girls to wear leggings? You know what I mean by leggings, the yoga pants that they kind of look like thick hose. And sometimes that's all they've got on is just leggings. And you can see just about everything. And he was writing in to us, asking us if it was okay. And you know what my first thought was? Where's this kid's parents or grandparents to be able to say, is this a good idea? Right? It's like he had nobody to talk to, and yet if I'm assuming he goes to some form of Christian church, but he was writing into us asking us for help. We shouldn't have that happen. We should be able to talk about modesty. Ladies, you should be able to help the younger generation know what is correct and what isn't correct. And yes, sometimes we'll sound old-fashioned, but there is nothing wrong with old-fashioned, right? They learn from it. They listen. They may not always agree with you, but they hear. Kids hear, and it's important for us to be able to do that. Admonish the young women to love their husbands, love the children, be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And that's the key. So that the word of God won't be blasphemed, our seniors need to be providing that information for those that are younger than us. Tomorrow's ministers need today's seniors to set the standard. That's being a good leader. How about to the young? I'll talk to the young here for a minute. How can you be a great leader in this congregation right here? How can you be a leader in this congregation? Well, I can't be a leader. I'm not baptized. I don't have, this great knowledge. Some of these people have been in the church since Moses and Noah. And I just can't do it. I don't have that in here. Yeah, you do too. Your example to others, as an example, to other teens. You know, they talk about peer pressure being a bad thing. Peer pressure can be a very good thing. Peer pressure can be a very positive thing. One of the things, again, that I was talking about at camp was if you get into a conversation and you hear the conversation going a wrong direction, just step in and say, this is wrong. And it will stop. They may say something kind of funny at you or oh, you're just an old so-and-so or whatever, but they'll stop because they know it's right. So as a young person, you can set the example to other young people. You can push your friends to do the right thing, to develop good character. When someone, even if that someone is your minister, starts to head down a wrong way, you can come up and correct me. I am fine with that. I've said this before and I say it again. If I ever say Trump instead of Mr. Trump or President Trump, I want you to come up and tell me that I made a mistake, because that's disrespectful. And that pops out of my head every once in a while, and I don't mean for it to, but if I do that and I don't hear it, I expect you to come up and tell me. Even if you're 5, 6, 10, 12, 15 years old. If I've done something wrong, you can tell me. I'll take it pretty well. Ezekiel chapter 22. Ezekiel chapter 22 and in verse 30. Just a single verse here. It's a very interesting one. This is something that I would like for all of us to consider, but especially in talking to our teenagers and our young people in the audience today. This is what God wants. Ezekiel chapter 22 and verse 30. This is God speaking. I sought for a person among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land, that I shouldn't destroy it. But then he goes on and says, but I found none. We are in a nation that is not training leaders. We're in a nation that is training sissies. I want us to learn leadership so that you can be leaders with the knowledge that you have, whatever that knowledge is at this point in time, and you can stand in the gap. And if somebody, if you're at camp and somebody's heading down a wrong path, you be the one to stand in the gap and say, no, we're not doing this. Let's go a different direction. You can do that yourself. There's no age minimum and there's no age maximum for standing in the gap. I was thinking about a kind of a funny story here. A dad's out in back and he's working on his fence, and he's got a hammer in his hand, and his five-year-old's out there, and he whacks his thumb with the hammer, and a word comes out that shouldn't come out. Could you just hear a five-year-old say, Daddy, should you be saying that? That's a five-year-old being a leader. He's telling his dad, you shouldn't say words like that. That's truth. You can be 3 years old and be a leader. You can stand up for what you know is right. Teach your children to stand up for what is right. That's standing in the gap. You can do that at age 3. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 4, and let's look at something else that Paul told Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 4. In verse 12. And I'll give you time to get there for a second. 1 Timothy 4, and verse 12. This is God, through the Apostle Paul as a senior, talking to Timothy, who is a young man. And I'm saying this to all of you that are young people in the audience. Don't let anyone despise your youth. Just because you're a teenager doesn't mean that you're not valued in this congregation. And it doesn't mean that you've got sometimes some wise points that we as the older people in the congregation need to listen to. Don't let anyone despise your youth. I can just see Timothy being a 23-year-old, and he's got 60-year-olds in the audience. Well, what can you teach me? And Paul was saying, don't ever let someone think that just because you're a young minister that you don't have something to give. Don't let anyone despise your youth, but be an example. Teenagers, be an example. Set the standard. Set the bar. Be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Verse 13, till I come, give attention to reading. So this is what you can do to yourself. to exhortation, to doctrine. You can be studying, you can be learning, you can be growing. It doesn't always have to be just reading the Bible. There are other ways to get training. You can be thinking about what you're going to do next week, or what you want to do when you get to college, what job are you going to do. All those things are forward planning and forward looking. They make you leaders. Verse 14, don't neglect the gift that is in you. All of you have access to the Holy Spirit. You may not be baptized yet, but because your parents are, you have access to it. Use it. Use it. Don't neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things and give yourself entirely to them, that you may, that your progress may be evident to all. You know, when I go to camp, I see a few, just a few, bad examples. But out of there's 48 boys and 48 girls going this year. Out of that 96, I'll only see three, maybe four bad examples. But I'll see a bunch of great examples. And I've said this before here, but I want to tell you all of something that I saw the very first year I went to camp. There was a girl who probably was 12 or 13, raised on a farm and was into horses and all that. I don't know that she had ever really worn really good clothes before. She was new to the church. And she sat down on the floor in a short skirt, cross-legged. And I thought, oh boy. So I'm making my way over to try and tell her, this is not right. You shouldn't be doing this in a short skirt. Before I could get there, a 15-year-old boy walked up to her and said, hey, it would be more comfortable if we sat on these chairs over here. Why don't you come over here and we'll talk? You know why he did that? Because he didn't want her to be embarrassed. That's being a leader at 15. And they did. And they got to be friends and probably are Facebook friends and all of that to this day. This was years and years ago. That was being a leader, something you can do no matter what age. Don't let anyone despise your youth. Set the example. How about to those of you that are introverts? Oh, boy. If I were to ask anybody that's an introvert, raise your hand. Nobody would raise their hand because introverts don't raise hands. But you know who you are. If you're an introvert, can you be a leader? Being a leader doesn't mean that you have to be up in front of this podium. You can be a leader from within a group. You can co-lead projects. Maybe there's the type A alpha male that's doing all the talking, but if the group is heading into a direction that maybe is wrong, you can just simply say, well, have you ever thought about this? Oh, well, and off they go to the right direction. You can lead from within a group. You don't have to lead at the podium. An introvert can be a leader. Remember Moses? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 4. Moses could be a real crybaby at times. I say that with all due respect. You'll probably hear this sermon one day and come thump me on the back of the head, but I just get a kick out of Moses. Exodus chapter 4, verse 10. Then Moses said to the Eternal, "Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent. Neither before nor since have you spoken to your servant, but I'm slow of speech and slow of tongue." Oh, please don't use me. Please don't make me a leader. I don't want to stand up, as Charlton Heston did with the stick and say, "Don't fear, believe in God," or whatever it was that he said. Moses didn't want to do that. He was, I can't even speak well, right? That's the number one greatest fear is public speaking. And that was what Moses was telling God. I'm not a public speaker. I can't do this. Yet what did God say back to him? So the Eternal said to him, "Who made your mouth? Who made your tongue? I can do anything I want with you." Moses didn't see it that way. "Who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Eternal? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you should say." But he said, "Oh, my Lord, please don't send me. Not me. Don't make me do this." Moses may have been an introvert. I don't know. It was interesting that but I know at the time, he just wasn't sure that he could do this. And yet God gave him what he needed when he needed. And one of the things he gave him was his brother, who probably was an extrovert, so that he could help. You can learn. You can learn this. I'm not saying you have, and one of the things I just want to reiterate now, in case there's anyone out there who's choked with fear over this leadership program, I'm not going to make any of you stand up and give speeches. That's not what this leadership program is different. In some ways, I wish it would, because I think that it would teach you some pretty neat things. But that being said, that's not what this is about, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. I have a couple of quotes that I wanted to show you, just one more. But this one is from Dwight David Eisenhower, which was a pretty good leader in himself. I want you to compare this to the list that General Powell did. The qualities of a great man are vision, integrity, courage, understanding, the power of articulation, and the profundity of character. I especially like the last. This, the enormous amount of character that a real leader shows. None of those mention financial accounting or managerial accounting or organizational analysis or Poisson tables. It's just not mentioned. The qualities of a great man are vision, integrity, courage, understanding, the power of articulation, and the profundity of character. Those qualities don't depend on how old you are. They don't depend on what race you are. They don't depend on what gender you are. Everyone can develop these characters. And that's what we want to do with this leadership program. They're not just for those who desire to be in charge. The greatest leaders have the greatest character. What I want to do is I want to show you, this is really the last slide that I have, and then we'll end. I want to show you what the program is that we're going to be doing so that you can get an idea of what it is that we're talking about. I want to go through each one of these points. Now, some of these I've already given as sermons, but I still want to give them again, and I want to give them in order because there's good information here. The first one that we'll give, which is going to be on the Sabbath of June 30th, and I'll get to that in just a minute, the heart of a godly servant. To be a leader, you have to learn to be a servant. King David was a great leader, but he was a shepherd. He served his father in the sheep. What heart do you need to have? What does your heart have to do with being a great leader? That is a quality of character. Pride versus humility. You know, sometimes those who want to be leaders are the worst leaders because they want it so badly. When I was at Ambassador College, there was a kid in my freshman Bible. And Greg Albrecht asked a question, and this kid held his hand up. Mr. Albrecht called on him, and he said, "Well, I feel that I'm qualified to answer this question since I'm going to be a minister." He didn't even make it through the first year of Ambassador College. That's not the direction that you want to go. Pride versus humility. What is being truly humble? A leader can be humble. A leader does not have to have this air of arrogance about him. You can be very humble and yet be a leader. Christian priorities in life. To be a leader in the church, in school, in work, wherever, at camp, you've got to live the correct examples. And what are your Christian priorities? I was talking to someone, I don't even remember who it was, last week. They asked me if I had a place where I did most of my praying. And I said, yeah, there's a chair in my study. And that is when it's time for me to pray, my body goes to that chair. I'm comfortable with it. I don't know why. There's nothing special about it. It's not a holy chair. But I just feel like that's where I go. And if you set those priorities, is there a certain time when you pray? Is there a certain time when you study? Do you study? Right? All of those priorities in life. Next one is the pitfalls of service. That's something that may not immediately come to mind. But sometimes when you're in a leadership role, things can go wrong. And when they do, how do you deal with it? What are the pitfalls of trying to be a leader for whatever it is? You need to be careful about this. You need to be making sure that you're where you need to be so that you can recover from it. Our example to the world and the church. Again, I said this before. Do we have one set of standards while we're here and another while we're at work? We shouldn't be doing that. We should be setting the standard everywhere so that our example, again, remember what we said earlier. Always be ready to preach a sermon and use words if necessary. You, by your example, show the world what a true Christian is. Godly marriage and family, a very important part of leadership, is making sure that you're a good husband or good wife, that you're a good son or daughter, that you're a good father or mother, that you're a good grandparent. Those things are important. Mastering the tools of Christian growth. You know, there's a lot of junk out there on the internet now. Some people say, oh, the internet's the greatest thing. It is in one perspective. Back in the days when Mr. Armstrong was learning about the Sabbath, he had to drive a couple of hours to, was it Portland? Or it was some library to try and find these books. Well, all that stuff's digitized now. You can find all of that. But you also can find the worst filth on the planet. So you have to be careful. You have to master the tools of Christian growth. Development of sound doctrine. One of the things that, again, that I say that Mr. Franks is very concerned with is that we maintain a good, firm foundation on doctrine. How do you develop sound doctrine in your life? Because it isn't what I say up here. If it isn't internalized in your head, if it isn't internalized in my head, then we're not going to be good leaders. We have to learn to develop sound doctrine. For those that have an interest in this, giving sermonettes and split sermons, this is a really neat module. It is a good one for the wives, too. I often will give sermons. I'll let her see my notes, or if I give it in Laurel and I come down here, I ask her on the way down what worked and what didn't. She's good at that, and you ladies can be, too. It helps to be able to bounce ideas off of someone that you really trust. That's a great thing. And then finally, self-examination and being able to take correction. A leader has to be able to say, you know what, I goofed up, and I'm sorry. And that's not easy to do. Because sometimes as a leader, you think, well, if I show weakness, if any of you watch NCIS, Agent Gibbs has one of his rules, never say you're sorry. It's a sign of weakness. No, it's not. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of character. It's a sign that you are a good leader because you're willing to learn. And the people will follow you if they think you're going to learn. So again, a couple of these will be repeats because I've done them in recent sermons, but I still want to go through them. The Sabbath of June 30th at 10:30, we'll have the first leadership seminar, followed by a quick lunch. For those of you that want to come to this, bring a lunch with you, and we'll just set some tables up, and we'll just enjoy some fellowship here. It should last somewhere between 60 and 90 minutes. And then we can enjoy a little potluck together, and then we'll have services that day at 1 o'clock or maybe 2 o'clock if we can stretch it out a little bit. I'll talk to Mr. Tommy about that. These classes are for anyone who wants to attend. They are not mandatory. You can come if you're 5. You can come if you're 105 or anywhere in between. You do not have to come. I'm not going to take a list. I'm not going to think bad of you if you don't. I understand that some of you just can't make it. We will record them, and I'm hoping, again, I got to talk to Mr. Josh back there, but if we can get these recorded and put online, if you miss one, you should be able to go out under maybe a password-protected link to the New Orleans website, and maybe we can have those available for you. The format, again, is I will give a lecture followed by a discussion. The discussion is open at any point in time. If you want to ask a question, just blurt out the question. I'm not looking. This is not where you sit silently and listen to the master. This is where we talk. And then at the end of the lecture, I want to break out into maybe groups and have a project. For instance, if we're talking about godly marriage, maybe I'll give you guys some PCD letters that I've gotten. You know, how can I get my husband to love me when he doesn't, he does this or he does that. And then maybe you can break off into groups and kind of come up with how would you answer that. And then find someone in your group that is the extrovert who can stand up and say, well, here's what we came up with. Right? You know what I'm saying? You can still have your input, but you don't have to be the one to stand up and present. But it will help you to learn leadership by getting involved in how do you answer these things. And I promise you, in life, you're going to get asked a lot of these questions. They're very helpful, and they'll be very good. So we'll do things like that. Again, each lesson will be between 60 and 90 minutes. I hope that a lot of you will come. I'd love to see as many of you as can come as is possible. I also hope that we don't start out with 20 and then end up with 10 and then go down to 5 as we get toward the end of it. If you come, I'd like for you to be a part of this all the way through. I think that you will benefit from it. You'll be a better person because of it. You'll be a better leader for God and the kingdom. You also will be a better leader to those of us that are in this congregation. So hope to see you on June the 30th at 10:30.